Okay, I think we're about to get started. So I'd like to welcome everyone for coming tonight. My name is John Duda, and I work with Red Emma's Bookstore Coffee House down in Mount Vernon. We're a collectively run political bookstore and fair trade coffee house. I'm also one of the people from Red Emma's who got involved with this project, the 2640 project, which we're inside right now, which we're trying to turn into a thriving community organizing center, and from the looks of the people in the audience, I think that's something we're well on the way to doing. Our first exposure, we first heard about this, the released documents that came out earlier this week when we looked at the front page of the Baltimore Sun website, and there was a picture on there, and it was a picture of somewhat heavily redacted documents describing this extensive program of police surveillance that the ACLU had managed to get released from the Maryland State Police. And we were amazed to find out that right on the front page of the website, the documents that were chosen to be put, the page of the documents that was chosen to be put there, there was a mention of Red Emma's. There was a mention that there was an undercover police agent who was spying on a public event we were doing there with people organizing against the death penalty in Maryland. And we were actually pretty saddened, maybe not entirely surprised, given the fact that we've all spent a lot of time reading about the history of everything from the Red Scare to COINTELPRO. So we weren't entirely surprised that the police were engaged in this kind of behavior, but it did sadden us, and really, we were really disappointed. We're a project that believes in the free exchange of information. We believe, as I believe one of our bumper stickers says, that the most violent element in society is ignorance. We believe that what's important is openness, is people having access to information, being able to make decisions for themselves. And that's what we consider our form of activism. And to find out that the Maryland State Police Division of Homeland Security and Intelligence considered that to be a threat, considered the activities that were going on, where people were talking about what was going on in their city and their country, to be something that deserved to be monitored, that deserved to be categorized as under the crime of terrorism, was something that was deeply, deeply frightening. And I'm really glad to see all these people here tonight. I'm really excited to hear from the speakers, some of whom have had much more extensive surveillance and infiltration of their groups than the one time that this touched Red Emma's. And I'd like to welcome everyone here tonight. The person who's going to be doing the, I guess, emceeing for the night is Kim from the Campaign to End the Death Penalty, and she'll be taking care of introducing the speakers. And thank you all for coming.
Good evening, everybody. How you doing out there? Oh, y'all are kind of weak today. Hello? All right. Okay, so my name's Kimberly. I'm with Campaign to End the Death Penalty, also with the International Socialist Organization. And we have a lot to cover tonight, so I'm going to introduce our speakers. First, we do have Max from Baltimore Campaign to End the Death Penalty and Baltimore Pledge of Resistance, who's going to speak first at the end there. Then we have Terry Fitzgerald, who is also Campaign to End the Death Penalty, along with Mike Stark, wherever he is, where'd he go? Traffic, who will show up immediately. We also have, Mike Stark is also a Campaign to End the Death Penalty board member. We also have Dave Zirin, who is a political sports columnist and also CEDP member, along with Amy Fustin, I don't want to butcher your name, who's also with MD Citizens Against State Executions. And we also have David Rocha, who's in the audience, who is the ACLU staff attorney who's been working on the case. So, excellent, absolutely. So we have a lot to cover. We're going to give each speaker about 10 minutes to speak. We ask that everybody adhere to the time constraints so that everyone has time to talk and that we have a fruitful discussion afterwards with question and answers. I will be keeping time, so I think I'm going to actually turn it on over to Max, right over there.
I think it's appropriate. I'd like to know if there's any members of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the room. Please acknowledge yourself. Central Intelligence Agency, and maybe my favorite agency, the National Security Agency. No one here from those agencies? Sorry about that. Anyway, I'm going to Well, I assume they were here. There wasn't any need to mention. Well, they're not going to sit in the front row. A good spy is intermingled in the group. Anyway, this is an appropriate forum, St. John's. This place has been in the radical movement since I've been in Baltimore. The Baltimore Emergency Response Network, for example, was formed in this building here. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but a lot of churches won't even touch us. They won't get anywhere near us. They won't let us have meetings there. I could give you a long list. But we have places like St. John's, St. Vincent de Paul, that are standing with us in the struggle, and we have to acknowledge people that do those things because there's so few of them. But you have to remember, again, history. If I said to you, CISPIS, and in an investigation, do people know what I'm talking about? CISPIS. There's a couple of people here in the room that probably know this. Some of you, or most of you, probably don't know that the FBI investigated CISPIS from 1981 through 1983. And in this building right here, eventually got on the front page of the News American, the dearly departed News American, about how people here in Baltimore were spying on one of our meetings. Here in Baltimore, the group was called the Central American Solidarity Committee over at the Progressive Action Center, which is going to be closing here at the end of the month. I'm going to name names. Sheila Reese works not far from here up Charles Street. She was involved in spying on peace and justice groups. Her former husband is the head of something called the Malden Institute. I would advise you to Google that and get some more information. But they were in this room, and they were gathering names. They were taking down any names were on the mailing list. They're going outside getting license plates, et cetera, et cetera. So the point I'm coming to, this isn't new. None of what's happening today is new. This here is the American Friends Service Committee put this out, the police threat to political liberty. This was about how cities in this country were being investigated by red squads. Baltimore's in here. Again, at that time, it was, there's people here who might remember, well before my time, but might remember the head of the police, Palmer Lowe. He had a red squad going after Phil Berrigan, going after the American Friends Service Committee. We have people here from the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. All these groups were being investigated. It's in this particular book. And I urge you to give serious consideration to reading a book like this by Frank Donner, who's done a lot of work in this field. This is Protectors of Privilege, Red Squads and Police Repression in Urban America. One thing that jumps out at you in this particular book is how groups who were promoting violent activities could easily be infiltrated by agent provocateurs and caused them to be engaged in more violent acts, and these groups were destroyed. So the idea that they're going to come after, and I'll specifically talk more about the Pledge of Resistance, I'm a pacifist. All of our activities are nonviolent. So how did I wind up on this terrorist list? I've been arrested at Andrews Air Force Base, and they had files on us out at Andrews Air Force Base. There's actually a plowshares action out there. B-52 bomber was disarmed during an air show. I've been arrested at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, one of the number one nuclear weapons labs in the country. They had files on us there. They were sharing files with other weapons labs because we have a network all around this country of people protesting weapons systems and military spending and weapons labs and all of that. And all of these people were sharing information. Now we come to 9/11, and I urge you to get a copy of the Nation magazine. There's an article in there by Bob Dreyfus. It was June 2002. I actually read it online in May, but when the magazine came out, the article is entitled "The Cops Are Watching You." He came to Maryland. He lives down in Virginia. He came to Maryland. He interviewed Colonel Mitchell, who was the head of the state police at that time, Ed Norris, who was the head of Baltimore City Police, and other heads of police agencies in Maryland. What they were doing at that time was setting up joint terrorism task forces. Well, for you to get federal funding, you had to have terrorist groups. So after I read the article, I went down to our death penalty demonstration. We do one every Monday, 5 to 6 outside the death house. Been doing it probably 8 years. I was telling people, where in the world are they going to find terrorist groups in Maryland? The article indicates that there weren't any. It was zilch of any type of terrorist activity at that time. And so I said, well, it's going to be the Pledge of Resistance. It's going to be the Jonah House. It's going to be Greenpeace, groups like that. So none of what is coming out now is a surprise to me. But you should know what happened, because we've got to proceed forward with this. Only because we have been going out to the National Security Agency and risking arrest, and through the only trial, I've been arrested at the National Security Agency, I would guess, 6 times. Only one trial came out of any of the arrests that take place at the National Security Agency. October 3rd, 04, 5 of us were arrested. Jay Gillen, some of you know him from Project Algebra, Lavana Rushchild, myself, Cindy Farquhar, and Marilyn Carlisle, we all did the same thing. We wrote a letter to the director, asked for a meeting, we were arrested. And when you're arrested there, that's Fort Meade property, so you are then taken to federal district court and a military attorney will try you. I was a contact person for the group. He calls me and he indicates that he's dismissing charges for 3 of us, but he's going forward with Marilyn and Cindy. And I have no idea why he dismissed charges. But as a result of that trial, through discovery, we got the documents. We knew they were spying on us. We had all kinds of indication they were spying on us, but we couldn't physically prove it. Finally, we got the evidence. I filed a FOIA request to get other documents at the National Security Agency, because I was a witness in that trial, and the head of security who provided these documents, he was in the witness room, I was in the witness room, he brought to court that day, he brought a loose leaf binder of this size, Manhattan phone book. And he would come in and out of court bringing documents. Judge Susan Garvey forced him to bring up documents. She actually redacted the documents. But when I filed the FOIA request, we were told, yes, we do have documents on you, meaning the group, but it would cost $1,400 in copying charges. We, on principle, said, no, we're not going to pay $1,400, even though we had people who were willing to give us the money. We said, no, this is something we should have. We're not using it for commercial reasons. Long and the short is, we turned this over to the ACLU. After a long period of time, they took it on. They actually then got Heller Ehrman in Washington, D.C., to do this pro bono. And these folks have been doing extraordinary work. They're also working with 6 detainees in Guantanamo. And they're the ones that put out these requests all over the place. So the Maryland State Police said, we have one document, we can't give it to you because there's covert activity there, we don't want to reveal it. Well, once they were sued, this information was provided by the Attorney General's office. It's all online. The Baltimore City Police claims they have no information on us. They are fabricating a lie. They have documents on us, hopefully we will get those. We're still waiting for the National Security Agency documents and other police agencies. And this is really, really going to blow. It's going to just get bigger. There's already calls for congressional investigations. There's calls for investigations here in the state of Maryland. The last point I'm going to say, and I'll be here for any answers, questions, whatever, but we've got to get together, we've got to stay active, and we've got to take serious risks of peace. David Rokoff said on WAA on Wednesday at the Mark Steiner Show, if a death penalty group came to the ACLU 2 weeks ago and said, we think they're surveilling us, the ACLU would have turned them down and said, no, we don't have the resources, we don't believe that's true. We only found this out because people were taking serious risks, wound up in court where we could, through discovery, get these documents. We've got to stay together. Today, I'm astonished. This is a time of great crisis. I thought the Reagan-Bush administration was the worst. I thought it was the worst. This, I've never seen an administration this bad, and yet we do not have the people power. We do not have the people that are outraged or coming out and doing something about it. It's a very small group of us. So we've got to stay together. We've got to work together. There's a lot we can do. Repealing the death penalty, ending this war, finding out more information about the surveillance, fighting for the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. I hope we all stay together, and I'll be here to answer any questions. We have other people telling you about more information.
Thank you, Max. And without further ado, we have Mike Stark, CDP board member, who's finally here. Welcome.
I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. It's great to see so many people coming out in solidarity at a time when, in some ways, probably one of the things that might have occurred to people is like, well, surveillance, intimidation, repression, maybe I shouldn't come, right? Everybody, has to earn a living, and one of the things an option that's always available is like, well, I'm just going to stay away. But the fact that so many people have stood up and said, this is ridiculous, we're not going to stand for it, we're going to push back and push back hard and make it clear that these kinds of actions, these kinds of surveillance, dirty tricks by Ehrlich or any administration, Bush, won't be stood for, I think is an amazing thing. When I first, got the call from David Rocha, I thought it was a bad joke. It's like people, Maryland State Police infiltrating meetings at the American Friends Service Committee. Are you kidding me? Really? Like Quakers and Catholics and, pacifists and, socialists and anarchists and everybody, Democrats and even the occasional stray Republican coming together, to oppose the death penalty. Really? When we gave them out flyers, did they end up handing them out or did they just put them in their bag? Because that was real, it's like, so ludicrous that, the first reaction isn't even to be threatened by it. When you read the report and read just the how inaccurate it is just on the face of it. I mean, on one hand, there's like a great catalog of minutes of our meetings. Oh, yeah, I remember doing that event. Yeah, the attendance wasn't so well. Yeah, but that one was actually really good. Did we really have 150 at that one? It's like, wow, that's really great. But then it's like, then next to it is like, they can't figure out what the affiliations, first Mike Stark, myself, first I'm an anarchist, then I'm a socialist, then they're not sure what I am, or then the next paragraph, the National Socialists, like Nazis are coming out and supporting, because Nazis are really opposed to the racist death penalty, and, to even add to the comedy, you have Tim Hutchins, who, his two statements that really stand out are two statements. Are one is, this is completely proper, and we did it to keep the people of Maryland safe, and the second is, Ehrlich knew nothing about it, right? And so it's like immediate, like damage control. So Tim Hutchins, huh, where have I heard that name before? Tim Hutchins. Is this the same delegate Tim Hutchins that was one of the most vocal opponents of the death of any repeal legislation in the Maryland House of Delegates? Is this the same Tim Hutchins that was on Maryland Public Television in a roundtable setting? There's Kurt Bloodsworth. There's Tim Hutchins. Tim Hutchins. All the people in Carroll County are resolutely in support of the death penalty. Next seat over, Kurt Bloodsworth. Well, I'm from Carroll County, and I was wrongfully sent to the death row, and I'm not really, in support of the death penalty. This is the same Tim Hutchins that, carved in stone, absolute supporter of the death penalty. I believe he was a member of the Maryland Judiciary Committee. Anytime any legislation would come, he was the first, before that committee, he was the first person to slap it down, to offer hostile questions, or even to leave the room when abolitionists were in support, arguing for abolition of the death penalty. And then this is the same person, with that political agenda, who then is put in charge of the Maryland State Police, right? And what happens, right? Well, we saw what happened is abuse of power, abuse of discretion, using the Maryland State Police for his own political ends, and all under the thin tissue paper of Homeland Security making people safer. Well, of course, we know that doesn't make people safer. But what they were hoping to do is to make their death penalty safer, making their repressive, racist, anti-poor death penalty, trying to keep it up. Because of all the arguments that we've slapped down when it comes to the death penalty, does it deter crime? No serious scholar will even suggest that the death penalty deters crime. Does it You know, is it applied fairly? You know, does it kill the most heinous killers? Does it in any way, you know, serve any social good? Is it is applied in any way? And all those have been proven false. It's been shown to be applied in a racist manner, that you're more likely to get the death penalty based upon the quality of defense, your quality of defense versus the circumstance of your trial. It's anti-poor. It sends the innocent to die. All those arguments crumble, and people like Delegate Tim Hutchins are left with nothing left to support their argument. They've got one thin argument left, which is, for much of Maryland history, the polls have indicated that the majority of people support the death penalty. That's the one, you know, fig leaf they have left in terms of actually propping up the institution of the death penalty. And yet, they are so frightened of what will happen if activists are out there and basically putting out the facts through petitions, through flyers, hitting the pavement, putting on public forums, demonstrating in opposition of the death penalty, that they're going to basically send their hitmen through the Maryland State Police in to shut that down. And that is something that you know, we had no idea was going on, but clearly they were using as a way to further their agenda, as a way to prop up the death penalty. The death penalty has been shown to be an archaic, barbaric institution. So of course you would, you know, of course it works perfectly for these kinds of things, these kinds of repressive Nixonian, you know, Richard Nixon-esque repressive tactics, these COINTELPRO types of tactics, because the very heart of the death penalty is based upon, you know, doing damage to the human spirit, doing damage to truth, you know, instilling fear in ordinary people's hearts, and basically trying to teach people that the state is in control, that we're the ones in charge, and as the final justification of our ultimate authority, that we'll kill you if you cross the line. That's what the death penalty is ultimately, I think, symbolically about. And the fact that it would be joined with these kinds of repressive mechanisms, you know, infiltration, et cetera, I think is no coincidence. I think the fact that people have responded the way folks are here tonight, Max's call for solidarity, that anti-war activists, anti-death penalty activists, all social justice activists need to stand up and unite to oppose these things, and to unite in, to say that no, our voices won't be silenced. We're going to stand up for our constitutional liberties, but more than that, we're going to stand up to continue to advance a different vision of how society can be, one based on equality, one based on hope and justice, and a human spirit that says no to these kinds of things. I think that's the kind of alternate vision we need to put forward, one that stands up against this repression. And again, I want to thank you all tonight.
Okay, I just want to take a little bit of time to acknowledge the family members of Vernon Evans in the back. We have Vernon Evans, who's been on the death row downtown at the Supermax for a crime he did not commit. So I just wanted to give him a shout out and some honor for really toughing his struggle out and putting up with what's going on. So solidarity. Without further ado. I'd like to introduce Terry Fitzgerald, also a member of Campaign to End the Death Penalty.
I'm Terry Fitzgerald. I'm a member of the Baltimore Coalition Against the Death Penalty. I'm a physician in the coalition, which is a coming together of various individuals and organizations opposed to the death penalty. I represent Baltimore Physicians for Social Responsibility, I'm going to try to give a little sense, a little idea of my response to this. But before that, I want to say again that all of us owe a great debt of gratitude to the ACLU and to all the work that they do. The people in the ACLU in spite of this bullshit about so-and-so being a card member of the ACLU, the people of the ACLU work entirely within the system to make the system work for us insofar as it's capable of doing that. They are like watchmen in the night, and when many of us, Max Obuchevsky aside, since he's always the watchman in the night, but when many of us aren't thinking about so many of these things, they are there watching, fighting, bringing the light on these terrible crimes, and helping to protect all of us. And it's extremely important that we all recognize this work that they do, tedious though it is. Why does this matter? On its surface, this is absurd. These are like people being paid probably very good money to take minutes of our meetings. Is this, and they are, as Mike said, rather good minutes of a lot of the meetings. So, I mean, is it just a question of abstract laws and rights? Well, yeah, it is. Okay, the Bill of Rights, these first 10 amendments are important, and we've all been taught that a lot. So when someone violates them, the response is, I shouldn't do that. But what is it really about? These actions by the police state of Maryland are a fundamental attack on the foundation of democracy. Democracy is not going to the stupid polls every 2 years and pushing a button, not even knowing what the hell is going to happen to your vote when you push the button. When we leaflet, when we talk to people on street corners, when we demonstrate, when we meet to organize and to plan, to bring information to people, to stir people up with facts and the truth, we are bringing life to democracy. This is the heart of democracy. Citizens working together to confront the government when it's wrong and to organize and educate other citizens to stand up and demand changes in policies. These acts by government agents make people afraid to take part. They undermine these actions of ours. They, in addition, we know that when you get on a list, it can threaten your job, it can threaten your job applications. I'm a physician. I treat people with addictions. Earlier this week, I spent the day with a DEA agent and an agent from the Maryland Drug Control Department. What do I know if I don't get the licenses that I want to get so that I can work in a prison to bring drug treatment to people in prisons and where it comes from? Now, I fully expect this, that I won't have any problems, but when you start getting on these government lists, as far as I know, I'm not on the terrorist list like Max is, but who knows who is, and it begins to undermine people's ability to do all sort of things. It makes people afraid. It keeps people away, and that is, in fact, part of what this is all about. In the extreme, this kind of spying is the basis of lists that rulers make up so that they know whom to go after to round up when the crisis really occurs and society begins to fall apart. And this is not crazy. This can happen anywhere. In actual fact, the kinds of notes that they give are very similar to the, I was speaking with physicians who had come from South Africa during the apartheid time. They describe that these notes are very similar to the kinds of surveillance that was done on them when they were active in college. And it's very similar to the kinds of work that the Stasi did, the Staatssicherheitsagentur in East Berlin. If you've ever watched the movie Other People's Lives, you see this kind of tedious stuff, which is on the surface absurd, but it's the way that these people think. Because Max, and I hope all of us, and this is even a more fundamental part of this, because Max and I hope all of us have dedicated our lives to combating world domination and opposing rule through fear and hate, we do intend to be a threat to this government as it's currently set up. And so when you're asked, is Max Obuchevsky a threat to the government? He's a threat to this kind of government set up by this kind of politicians because he opposes world domination by a few, because he opposes hate as a method of ruling, fear as a method of keeping people in line. And I hope that all of us can say that, because in that way, we are in fact defending our democratic rights and the rights that these politicians claim to be protecting and which they in fact are undermining. This spying is just one point on the spectrum that leads to poor people being tricked into mortgages that they can't keep and therefore their homes being stolen from them, to the death penalty, to the black hole of Iraq, and to war after war after war. And this is why we must demand that this absurd and on its surface ridiculous surveillance of us, and it's not about me, and it's not about Max, it's about these fundamentals, that this must be totally exposed, that all the other documents that they have to come out. And if they do not, then O'Malley and the Attorney General and all of these people are just a pack of liars. Because if it is not exposed, then we're not going to overturn it. And that, in fact, we must also demand that laws be passed. And we cannot trust, as the Democratic legislators are saying now, we cannot trust, well, O'Malley says he won't do it, therefore that's enough. Laws must be passed to make this illegal, because you have to remember, it's only through laws that were forced through by the people years ago, the Freedom of Information Act and the Maryland Public Information Act. It's only because of these laws, which people years ago forced through, that we've been able to get these documents and that we're able to know what the hell these people are up. Just a little tip of the iceberg. So it's very important that you stay active, you stay involved, and that we all in all ways stand up against this kind of spying. Thank you.
And next we will have Dave Zirin, also campaigning in the death penalty member and sports columnist.
Thank you.
I forgot to add, in the Baltimore Coalition Against the Death Penalty, are calling you and everyone else, and anyone to join us, to plan public action against this police surveillance and all that it means. We're proposing a meeting Saturday, August 2, noon, 12 noon, at the AFSC offices, 4806 York Road, and we hope to have this discussed later. We're open to changing the time, but that a number of people looked this over, and that seems to be as good a time as any. To plan a public action, Saturday, August 2, 12 noon, at the AFSC offices, because if we don't demand it, then the politicians won't act on it. And there are little flyers in the back that you can pick up to help remind yourself. Sorry.
That's okay. How's everybody doing? Oh, we can do better than that. The Maryland State Police is probably like, wow, they're not too into this meeting right now. But he's wearing a nice brown shirt with a lovely white trim. No, how's everybody doing? There we go. Yes, they were spying on a sports writer. It's amazing. And I'd really like to flatter myself and think it's because Governor Ehrlich and the Maryland State Police were really curious about my thoughts on who would win the Super Bowl this year, but no. They weren't watching me for who I am, but because of what I'm a part of, and that's a movement to end the racist death penalty. It's a movement that Bob Ehrlich opposed, and because he and his people opposed it, because we disagreed with him, we were a threat to Homeland Security. Because our very ideas differed to those in power, we were deemed needing to be watched. And I just want to be clear about what I believe before I say anything else. I believe that such actions are illegal, that they're unconstitutional, and that those who ordered it belong in prison. And if that means Bob Ehrlich has to be frog marched out of his mini mansion, then so be it. If that means Tim Hutchins has to find a cell as his new home, then so be it. because there's an old expression from Eugene Debs, who was a socialist who spent years behind bars for making a speech against World War I, where he said that the criminal justice system was like a magical fishing net that catches minnows, yet lets the whales go free. And I, for one, am just tired of this. I'm tired that there are thousands of people in this state behind bars for petty crimes, yet Bob Ehrlich and his minions can break the law and walk free. This is what has to end. It's time that the whales paid a price. Now, I gotta be honest with you, over the last several days, my mind has just been racing. That happens when you see your name in Maryland surveillance reports. But three thoughts really have become very clear. And I just wanna share those, and then I'll sit down. I wanna hear what folks here have to say. The first thing is that I have never been prouder to be part of a movement to end capital punishment in this state. I mean, we in Maryland, I feel like we've led the country on this issue, and we were threatening enough that they decided that the Constitution was expendable. And I think there's some pride to take from that, frankly. And I also think we should take some confidence that this makes it very clear that they can't win the debate fair and square. They have to resort to these dirty tricks because we're right and they're wrong. They say death row, we say hell no. And you know what? The people are on the side of hell no, and that's why they sent people after us. Now, so that's the first thing, proud to be part of the anti-death penalty movement. But the second thing, and I'll be honest about this, when this story broke, and I have a feeling I'm not alone in saying this, I started thinking about every single person who's come to a meeting, every new face that was there one week and gone the next, anyone who ever asked a question. Honestly, I've gotten emails from people around the country as I've done some interviews on Air America and Democracy Now!, people sending me little cell phone pictures of people they thought might be agents, people who might be the mysterious Lucy. I get these mailed to me and people ask the question, is this Lucy? Is this Lucy? Is this the person? And some of the people, I'm just like, no, that's not Lucy. I think that's just a chair. But people are getting very agitated by anything alien or strange in their meetings. And as I got another email from another person who sent a picture of somebody with a huge mohawk, pierces everywhere, and they're like, is this Lucy? It clicked for me. This is exactly the way they want us to think. They want us divided. They want us silenced. They want us suspicious of each other. And it really has a goal. It has a goal of putting a chill on our side and making us jump at shadows. And I think it's so important that we not let that happen, especially now. There was a statistic released today that 84% of the country believes we're going in the wrong direction, and that George W. Bush, he's roughly about as popular as the measles. And I think in the face of recession and war, it's so important that we continue to welcome new people into our struggle. And it's so very important that we foster an atmosphere that's not suspicious of new faces, voices, and ideas. And that we continue to welcome people who, like the family of Vernon Evans, just don't have a choice about whether or not to fight back in this current climate. They have to fight back. And it's important that we create space that's welcoming to these new people and these new voices. And of course, that's why it's so important we're here tonight, to get out of the chill and into the warmth that comes with struggle. Now, I'm not arguing that we'd be stupid here. I mean, if we're in a meeting and we're talking about doing a picket or doing a petition and someone raises their hands with a big smile and says, so where do you keep the weapons? I mean, I think it's okay that raises some concerns. But as long as our objectives are clear and our practices are open and democratic and principled, we should feel secure. And if undercover police officers feel like they have to hand out 1,000 flyers to earn our trust, well, then that just might be the price that we have to pay. So that's the second point I want to make, is that we can't let them crawl into our heads, because then they win. But the third point I want to make is something about having perspective. This is my third and last point. I mean, we on this panel, you could say that we're victims of the Patriot Act and the Department of Homeland Security, no doubt about it, but we're in no way the people who've suffered the most. Those people are in Guantanamo Bay. These are people who've been tortured. These are people who are having their mosques and homes bugged. They are our Arab brothers and sisters. They are our Muslim brothers and sisters, and we need to remember them here tonight. Because many of us, myself included, have made the point to say that, hey, we're about as far from terrorists as you can imagine. Someone like Max, who's been a pacifist for decades, that's as far as a terrorist that you can imagine. But I think it's important to say that the problem is not that Homeland Security was surveilling the wrong people. It's that they were surveilling anybody. I mean, this is a culture of fear that says some people deserve to be watched. And we should be clear that that's driven by Islamophobia. And it's fed by the need of the Bush administration to create an enemy at home, even where none exists. I mean, it's the reason why my Arab and Muslim friends feel like they have targets on their back. It's the reason why Sami Al-Adian, who's a Palestinian refugee who's lived in the U.S. since 1975, had five children in this country, and taught at the University of South Florida, was arrested in 2003 and has been rotting behind bars ever since, even though the courts have found him to be not guilty of any crime. Aladian remains in prison today solely because he refuses to cooperate with government efforts to fabricate anti-terrorism cases against other pro-Palestinian community leaders. Sami Aladian is a hero for doing this. They've turned him into a criminal. That's the real face of who's been victimized by the Patriot Act and the Department of Homeland Security. Well, enough is enough. I mean, we need to realize that this is so much bigger than Maryland, so much bigger than our corner of the world, as Terry said. I really think we need to decide as a country, and there's really no middle ground here. I mean, either we have a constitution or we don't. Either we have the right to organize and assemble, or we should just put a padlock on the Capitol building with a sign that says closed for business. And either Bob Ehrlich and the state of Maryland pay for what they did, or we have no civil rights. I mean, I'm glad that Dennis Kucinich and State Senator Brian Frosch, I'm glad they want to hold hearings, but we can't wait for that. That's why I'm so glad that we're all going to be part of this lawsuit with the ACLU pushing forward. You know, I've been joking that by the time this is done, Bob Ehrlich is going to be paying for my daughter's braces. It's a little joke I've said. Well, just to be clear, her teeth are fine. She's over there if people want to check. And I really don't care if I get a penny. That's really not the point. But the point is to say that we deserve justice, and I'm not willing to wait on Martin O'Malley or any other political leader to give it to us. I mean, to use a sports term, it's time to go on offense. Our movement must use this moment to press forward and reverse the priorities that see millions go to jail when schools and hospitals rot, because it's justice time for anybody who's ever been harassed in the land of the free. I mean, I really do believe this. This is for Malcolm X. This is for Dr. King. This is for Angela Davis. This is for Paul Robeson. This is for Sami Aladian. And this is for anyone who dares stand up for social justice. We will not be silenced. And I just want to end very quickly just saying something about my dad. I told my dad about all this was going down yesterday. My dad is roughly to the right of Genghis Khan. He's a Republican. And when this happened, I was literally nervous before calling him up and telling him about all this because I just didn't want to deal with it. But I was even more scared he'd hear about an interview or see an article I wrote about it and then call me up and be like, what the hell is going on here? You know, so I was just freaking out about that. So I called him up and said, Dad, this is what happened. Maryland State Police were coming into our meetings. They're keeping notes about it. They took my name down. And he was silent for a second. And then he just said in a soft voice, he said, well, it sounds like you guys are on the side of the angels. Give them hell. And if my dad, could say that, then I have no doubt that we can leave this room and build the kind of movement that actually extracts justice for our side, because we're right and they're wrong. No justice, no peace. Thank you.
Well said. Our next speaker is David Rocha, who's actually the ACLU staff attorney, if I can ask him to come up for a second, followed by Amy Fusting.
Hi, everyone. Want to say a special hello to our friends from the state police who are here. I'm not going to talk much about the substance of what happened. Other people have spoken eloquently, and I know I'm preaching to the converted here. I want to just say a few words about next steps. We know for sure that what has been disclosed thus far is not the full extent of what the state police were up to. We already know that for sure. And it is incumbent upon all of us here to make sure that the full extent of what the state police and other police agencies around the country, around the state, were up to is fully disclosed. And there are several prongs to making sure that that happens, and you are all a key part of it. One prong is we are going to be filing additional Public Information Act requests on behalf of virtually any and all and every other activist group in Maryland that wants us to do so. That's important. that's important because what we uncovered, we uncovered almost by accident. It's important to remember that the genesis of all of this was a document that was disclosed in discovery in the criminal trespass trial arising out of a single act of civil disobedience in 2003, which suggested the existence of surveillance. And it was based on that document that we filed Public Information Act requests with a host of state and local police agencies and a host of federal law enforcement agencies. But that Public Information Act request was focused on only a few peace groups and a few individuals. And it is only by virtue of the happenstance, not perhaps surprising, that a number of the individuals involved in some of the peace groups were also involved with some of the anti-death penalty groups, that we learned as much as we have learned from the documents that we have received, which documented this 14-month campaign of infiltration of anti-death penalty groups in Maryland. But it is because our request was so narrowly focused, and it is because there is so little rational reason to be targeting any of these groups, in fact, no rational reason, that as surprised as I was to get these documents, I will be even more surprised if they turn out to be the full extent. And as I have said, we already have what is to me convincing proof that it is not the full extent. So for anyone here who is a member of an activist group that was not already the subject of our pre-existing MPIAs, we want you to get in touch with us, and we will be filing additional Public Information Act requests to get the full scope of this. Now, you all know from press reports that there are federal and state investigations ongoing, and that is a good thing, that is important. But we are not going to rely only on those investigations to document the full truth about what happened. It is not sufficient for us to simply defer to our legislators and rely on our legislators to do our work for us. It is important that they exercise their oversight authority, but it is up to all of us as citizens to demand the truth and to demand accountability. So if you are a member of any other group, we have set up a special email address for you to get in contact with us. It's nospying@aclu-md.org. That information is also on our website. We also have information on the literature table back there. Get in touch with us. We are in the midst of already preparing additional Public Information Act requests, and we want to do so on behalf of as many groups as possible. In order to make things easier for us, we ask that not every member of every group contact us separately. That's a little bit of a nightmare. If you can, try and be organized about it. Get one person from the group to be the contact person who will contact us. That person will be our contact and will let us know who are the key organizers in the group that might have been named in surveillance reports. We want to file the requests on behalf of groups and on behalf of those key organizers. We've sent out messages to listservs today. Hopefully some of you, I know some of you have already gotten them. Please forward them widely, and I hope people will get in touch with us. In addition, everyone who is named in the documents that we disclosed should get in touch with us, because as I said, only a small number of people were the subjects of the original public information request, and the vast number of people who are mentioned in these documents are not yet our clients, were not yet the subject of Public Information Act requests. So we will be filing those on behalf of everyone who was named in the documents that we have. So that's one prong. Prong number two is the state and federal investigations that are ongoing. As I said, it's critically important that our legislative bodies exercise their oversight authority. You know, there's a lot of potential explanations for why this happened, and until we get more documents, we are not going to know why it happened. It's possible that they were targeting particular groups, but I think it is at least equally possible that what's behind this is the millions and millions and millions of dollars of federal anti-terrorism funding that has been flowing to state and local law enforcement agencies with the express mission of looking for terrorists. Now, there may be real threats out there. There are real threats out there. But when these millions of dollars are flowing into local law enforcement agencies, they have a need to justify that funding. And in the absence of being able to find actual threats, they uncover terrorists under every rock, and suddenly political protest groups become security threat groups, and lifelong pacifists like Max become suspected terrorists. That's what we've been warning about for years, and that's where reforms need to be focused in order to ensure that this doesn't happen again. That will require concerted political effort. It's important that Congress uncover the full scope of this because that will serve as justification for it. But we have been working on this for years now, and we will continue to work on it, and we hope you will work with us. The same thing is true at the state level. You know, this isn't the first time something like this has happened. And every time it happens, the law enforcement agencies say, we've learned our lesson, it was wrong, it'll never happen again. We've adopted very stringent internal controls to make sure it never, never happens. Well, how many times does it take before something more is done? So we will not rest and we will not be satisfied unless there are binding legal controls put in place at the local level to ensure that this does not happen again. The last piece of this is redressability. The people who were named in these reports and who were put into these databases need to be notified of that fact by the state and need to have an opportunity to have this information purged from law enforcement files. And that's a critically important component of solving this problem. On the day that we released the documents, we sent a letter to the governor making all the points that I'm making this evening and requesting specifically that. We have not yet received a response. The governor has made some positive statements saying that this was wrong, it shouldn't happen, that it won't happen. That's all to the good, but we can't be assured of that until the full extent of it is disclosed and until the people who were spied on are assured that that information has been taken out of government databases. So it's critically important that you make that point both to local legislators and to the governor. He needs to hear from folks about this. I think those are the key points. Again, if you are a member of a group that may have been spied on, please get in touch with us, because the only way we are going to be successful in filing Public Information Act requests is if we do so on behalf of people who may turn out to have been the targets of surveillance. That's the most important thing. Thank you very much. The email address is nospying@aclu-md.org. The information is also on our website, which is aclu-md.org. There's information back there on the literature table. And I'll be around for a while longer if people want to talk to me directly. Thanks very much, everyone.
All right, and last but not least, we have Amy Fusting, who is here. Welcome, front of Maryland Citizens Against State Executions.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. I've never been quite so proud to be a terrorist in my whole life. And if being opposed to the death penalty makes me one, then so be it, because I, too, am opposed to the death penalty, and I'm thrilled to see all of you here with so much passion on this issue, because it's so lacking in so many other areas. I think Shakespeare had it right when he said, when beggars die, no comets are seen. And I doubt if anyone who's on death row currently or who's ever been executed by our state is really above beggar level on the income scale. So I think he had it just right. And even though no comets will be seen, you all can be the comets who will be heard. And this, I'm so happy to be here, because I can tell you, if you don't already know about it, the Commission on Capital Punishment was recently impaneled by Governor O'Malley. It was Jamie Raskin's bill in the Senate, and he did a great job getting it passed. It passed. 9 members of JPR voted for that commission bill. Even some of the people who have been mentioned in the post as swing votes voted for the commission bill, and so we have really high hopes that this commission will come back with a recommendation that will help our efforts, and it's just amazing that they've been impaneled and they're starting right away. So I want to invite you all and urge you to come to testify at the hearing. All you have to do is come 30 minutes early, you can sign up, and everyone will have a chance to be heard. The hearing starts at 3 o'clock. Every one of the hearings start at 3 o'clock. They are over at 7 o'clock. They're in Annapolis. And you can go to our website if you want to get more information about that. But I really hope that you tell all your friends. The first hearing is July the 28th, Monday. It's coming up really quickly, and I hope you'll come. Hurricane Carter is going to come to the hearing on September 5th, I believe. That'll be the day that Innocence will be heard. We've got some great witnesses who are going to come in and talk to these commissioners. Jamie Raskin's on the commission. The chairman is Ben Civiletti. He's a former attorney general of the United States under Jimmy Carter. And lots of great folks are on that commission. Kirk Bloodsworth is on that commission, the first person exonerated in the United States, as I'm sure you all know, from death row with DNA evidence. So the True Patriot Act is coming to testify in Annapolis. And I know it's a little mundane, it's a little on the conventional side, but you got to do it. You got to come out and make your voice heard. And if you have any questions about any of this, you know, just please, I'll be here after the meeting is over, and, you know, happy to answer any questions. I'll tell you about who the commissioners are so you can get ready to come. Okay, thanks a lot, everyone.
All right. This is the part where we open the floor for discussions. What's going to happen is at the end of the discussion, the speakers are going to wrap up a little bit. At the end, I would suggest that everyone, maybe you'll raise your hand, I'll make a stack so that we can keep it flowing. Bear with me. And so we have about a good half an hour of discussion. A lot of points were said today talking about federal funding going after terrorist groups and how the state has to create enemies and on its own territory. Standing up to this, repressive tactics of COINTELPRO, enforcing state power. We talked a little bit about how the state is fundamentally attacking democracy, sorts of things like that. So without further ado, we can get the discussion going.
I'm Dave Schlesinger. I just moved back to Baltimore. I was living in the D.C. area. I'm mainly active on the 9/11 Truth movement. And this is a tremendous opportunity for the movement to prevent particularly the bombing of Iran, because they're not going to bomb Iran without an excuse. And they're not going to do their excuse if they can't use their excuse to round everyone in this room up and kill us. And the way they're going to do that, if they could get away with it, is that they have detention camps. Halliburton has been paid over $300 million to refurbish facilities around the country. We need to make sure that people we trust are able to examine these facilities and know that they have a right to examine these facilities in the event of a major terrorist attack, to make sure that we are not the ones populating those facilities. Ostensibly, they are for immigration issues. But we're not going to, I mean, many people know what happened in Indonesia in 65. They murdered 1 million people. They could do it here. I really liked what Dave Zirin said. Particularly his reference to his father, who was so conservative. There are conservative people in the 9/11 Truth movement. I am not conservative. I'm progressive. but we need to welcome them in for purposes of this issue. We need to stop, and it isn't just the spying. We need to make sure that they don't round us up. Terry spoke of Roundup. Thank you so much.
Okay, Maria Allwine, you're next.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maria Allwine. I've worked with Max in the Pledge for several years. I just want to make a couple points. We do feel that we were infiltrated earlier than 2005. So this isn't something that is related to a Republican administration or a Democratic administration. I don't want to get into the political football of this. The fact of the matter is that this is a larger issue that relates, as others have said better than I can, to the funding of these various groups. They all want the Homeland Security funding. There's billions of dollars up for grabs, so they have to justify themselves. The other thing is that I want to say, since the invasion of Iraq happened and we weren't able to stop it, a lot of people have been disheartened. I'll hear, what good does a demonstration do? It doesn't do any good. It doesn't change anything. But you know what? As Max and Dave Rocha said, this came out of one single act of civil resistance. And it's taken about 3 years for this to come to where it is today, what you've seen in the past week. Certainly what has occurred has exceeded our expectations. And we're just getting started. So never doubt, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but one thing that you do, you cannot anticipate what the results might be, but you do it because you believe in what you're doing. It's not because what I'm going to do is going to affect something right away, it's going to stop an invasion or whatever it is we're trying to do, but you do it because it's the right thing to do, and you never know how it will turn out. And this is really, really important, this issue. Because as I've said, it cuts to who we are as a country. And that's really all I want to say. But I encourage everybody to stay together. This is not the time to be intimidated or afraid. Because we are strong together. Was it Dave who said, we're right, and we know it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ben Dalby. I live in Baltimore City. I'm a member of the ISO and also the Campaign to End the Death Penalty, and have been active in D.C. and in Maryland around lots of different political issues, including the death penalty. And I just wanted to say a couple of things. First, about the commission, which will hold its first hearing 4 days from now in Annapolis. I agree that this commission is a tremendous opportunity in a tremendous step forward in the movement to abolish the death penalty in Maryland. I'm planning on testifying. I encourage everyone else who is able to do that to do so. However, I think we have a problem, which is how does the state of Maryland convene an ostensibly impartial and measured commission to study the history of the death penalty in Maryland, while at the same time, it's been revealed that there's been at least, a 14-month, if not longer, campaign directed from the top layers of the state government and the police service to intimidate, to infiltrate, and derail the movement against the death penalty. I think the point that Mike made about the question of public support and how afraid Bob Ehrlich was of that factor is entirely relevant to the question of the commission. And I don't think that the current governor, Martin O'Malley, can claim that this commission is an impartial commission without coming fully clean about exactly what has happened, releasing all documents, and making a specific commitment that the anti-death penalty and the peace movements in Maryland are no longer under surveillance, which he has which he has yet to do. So I think that we actually have an obligation and an opportunity to tie these two issues together and demand some real answers from the state of Maryland at this point.
Hello, I'm Mike. I just want to make a couple of comments about some really genuine and scary consequences of really silly espionage. I'm really glad, Max, that you mentioned John Rees. John Rees actually used to live right here on Calvert Street. I think the 2700 block.
It's actually St. Paul.
He was on St. Paul?
Yeah.
So even closer.
Even closer, yes.
But this is a guy who is British, came to the United States, wanted to act as a spy. The FBI turned him down and said, no, he's unreliable. So he started publishing his own report on activists. And he actually, ironically, opened up a lefty bookstore, a used bookstore in D.C., underneath of an activist space so that he could draw people in and draw them into conversations and find out what was going on. But he's continued this on and on and on and on and on. And a lot of his stuff is absurd, but he sends this newsletter around to police agencies throughout the country. In 2000, in Philadelphia, the Republican National Convention met, and there was a warehouse that folks were using to make puppets and signs and stuff like that for the protest. The police surrounded it and raided it and arrested, I think it was 40 people that were there inside of this warehouse. It came out that in getting the warrant to raid this warehouse and arrest a bunch of people and destroy puppets and protest signs, that they'd used a report generated by John Rees in which he claimed in the year 2000 that these activist groups were receiving funding from communist groups in Russia. And it's absurd, but it was used to essentially shut down the messaging of a protest in the year 2000. And then something that's even scarier, and I'm sure, Max, that you also know about this, is the case of Brian Wilson, not the Beach Boy Brian Wilson, but the Vietnam vet Brian Wilson, who in the 80s was very actively involved in the Nicaragua solidarity struggle. And he was blocking an arms shipment between an arms plant and a port. There was about 10 miles of railroad track, and it was only used to deliver these weapons from the plant to the port. And he and other activists sent a letter in advance saying, we're going to be out on the tracks blocking the tracks and making it so you can't deliver these weapons. And they all signed their names. This plant submitted this letter to the FBI and said, what should we do? The FBI got back to the plant and said, whatever you do, don't cede to their demands. There are known terrorists on this list. Or that have signed off on this document. The terrorist was Brian Wilson, who was on the track the day the train came down at about three times the allowable speed on that track. And they ran him over and he lost his legs. And it was through discovery that he found out what was going on with this. He was named a terrorist because he had done a hunger strike on the Capitol steps. And that's how the FBI informed this plant to not slow down the train, not do anything other than speed it up, apparently. And consequently, the guy lost his legs doing a nonviolent civil disobedience act.
You should mention that he was a Vietnam veteran, and also this was the Concord Naval Weapons Station. I've been there. I've actually been to the tracks because the protests continued after Brian had his legs cut off.
We do encourage questions of any kind also in this public discussion. Don't be afraid. Come up, wave your hand. I'm still adding people to the stack, so just make sure that I see you.
Hi, good evening. I have a question for the panel. I believe it was last year, there was a bill introduced in Congress, the Violent Radicalization Homegrown Terrorist Act, which failed in the House. And then Joseph Lieberman is preparing to introduce a similar bill in the House. And I wanted to know, any latest on that, if there's any sort of political muscle that's pushing that as well, and what's any sort of movement in regards to that?
Did you want to answer it? Or?
Are you answering the question?
Oh.
He asked the question.
Yeah. Oh. You can answer it when you come back at the end?
Yeah, at the end.
Maybe?
All right, go ahead. Well, we don't have an answer.
Well, yeah, the bill didn't pass, and there's nothing like it. I mean, it was a really, really outrageous piece of legislation, and it didn't pass.
in the docket at this time.
Okay, my name's Elena Smith. I'm with the Campaign to End the Death Penalty and the International Socialist Organization in Baltimore. And I've been a socialist and an activist since right after 9/11. And that was a very hard time to be an activist. You know, you sit in these meetings, go to these protests, and think, what can this possibly do? I go to a protest, they're still bombing Iraq. And for years, it's like this, right? But for years and years now, I've actually seen us win some things, especially with the campaign to end the death penalty, you know, and you know, reading through these documents that they release and remembering sitting in every one of those meetings, you know, it brought me back to, you know, all the successes we've seen. We saved Vernon Evans' life, okay? You know, we won a stay of his execution. We actually saved a person's life by sitting in these rooms and talking and being out on the street and handing out flyers, and that is something, right? And it's something that they're afraid of. The fact that this is all coming out now, this surveillance, shows me that what we're doing when we're talking and when we're marching and protesting and meeting and organizing, that's something that they're really deeply afraid of. And another thing that came out to me in those documents, if you've read them, you'll see some other things that they're afraid of. They're afraid of the way they described Crystal and Donnie as articulate black people. That's something that they find threatening, right? Their fear of racial tension, right? And I mean, we can see the resources they put into this. What we're doing matters and is an actual threat to them, and we got to keep on doing it, and more people need to keep on doing it because it's having an effect. You know, I started being an activist right after 9/11, and I saw from then most of the nation waving flags, you know, patriotism. And I, you know, in less than a decade, most of the country is adamantly against the war. You know, they couldn't even hold on to that massive patriotism right after 9/11 for you know, years. You know, we were able to cut against that through activism. So that's why people should come and sit in these meetings and come out to protest. And there's no better time to start being an activist than right now.
Again, we do encourage hands and questions and statements.
How you guys doing? My name is Sherry, and I'm a part of the International Socialist Organization, and I was also a supporter of the campaign to end the death penalty. And this is one of the things I wanted to say, that right now at this moment, I'm very proud to be a part of an organization that actually stays together and benefits all of us. We're all well organized. We're not paid to do any of this. We're completely volunteer. Most of us live off the funds that each of our members give to each other. So that shows that we're actually dedicated and actually wanting to achieve what we're out there demonstrating, protesting, organizing meetings. The part of the reason that they're scared is because they know that people well organized can actually do things and bring about change, not just bringing in new presidents, Obama and McCain and all that. It's actually going to take people on the streets actually demonstrating for the things that they need. That's what's happened in the past. For example, when we won abortion rights, Republican presidents signed this. That was because people actually demonstrated out on the streets. And so I had one other question that I wanted to ask David from ACLU. I want to know what to the farthest extent that they went. Did they look at personal information like social security numbers, addresses, things of that nature? Also, if they monitored any phone calls or conference calls that the campaign was on. And also, just a little like tidbit, if the list includes people that are deceased. We had a former member named Josh Brand, and he died last year, which I'm very still trying to get over it because we had it here. But I just wanted to know if his name was on there.
Regarding the extent of what they did, we still don't know. We do know that for at least one person, with respect to Max, they did go down to the level of detail that you asked about.
social security number, address, associations, whether he had tattoos or not, et cetera. it really is insane and incomprehensible. As far as wiretaps, we don't know. There's nothing in the documents that we have that say yes or no. We do know that the agent joined the listserv of the campaign to end the death penalty under an assumed name, using an email address that they created for that purpose. Unfortunately, because folks have gone back through their records, we now know what that email, actually we know several email addresses that they use, so that's very helpful and has already helped us to document additional surveillance that they were engaged in. And then I think the last question you asked is whether a particular person, Brandon, was mentioned. I don't recall that name, but I don't recall every name that was mentioned in the document. On our website, we have prepared an index to the documents that we've received that lists every group that's mentioned, every person that was identified by name. Some people are not identified by name. I'm mentioned, for example, though not by name, but by description. So we've listed every person and group that we were able to identify, and I am reasonably certain that list is on our website so that you don't have to engage in the same tedious work. I'll make sure tonight that it is on our website if it isn't already, and you can pull that list off our website and look at it. And again, that's critical, because if you or anyone you know is named in this document, either, and I urge you to look at these documents, they are on our website for everyone to see. For everyone who is named, we want them to get in contact with us so that we can file a new MPIA on their behalf and find out exactly the full scope of what was done. Did that answer your question? Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Crystal, and I am the youngest of four sisters of Vernon Evans, who has been on death row for over 20 years now. And I'd like to bring you a message from my big brother. Not the big brother who may be watching us right now, but from my real big brother. As I said, I'd like to bring you a message, but we were talking last night and our phone call was terminated abruptly. So we didn't get to the message part. We were actually talking about what was going on and the phone call just cut off. So when you are a sibling, though, of somebody that's been on death row, a lot of strange things, you know, happen. And so surveillance happens. And you know, you kind of know that, you know, somebody's sitting right there looking at you, and you feel that other strange things happen in your lives. But I just wanted to say to you that it's just such an honor to be in your presence, because you are people who have been very active and who have kept this issue alive in Maryland despite the execution of, unfortunately, of other inmates who have also been on death row. So I just want to thank you for your activism and your support and the coalition. And I just can't tell you how our family feels about what's happening to people right now as a result of them doing the right thing. It's just such an honor to be just to be in your presence and to know that there are people out there who stand up for what they believe in, even when it doesn't seemingly affect them, but they know that it does. So I just want to just extend our thanks on behalf of my family on what you've done, and I just want to ask you and to encourage you to continue to do what you do, because you're doing the right thing. And death row. Death row.
Death row.
That's right.
All right.
Thank you. This will be an open stack afterwards, if I can get some hay.
So it's nice to open up the Sun and see so many letters to the editor as well as the editorial condemning the police surveillance. But a problem that I think we really need to counter for a lot of the folks is that they're saying, and a lot of the people I talk to, you know, I'm so angry that my tax money is going that way, you know, that they're surveilling peaceful activists when there's all this real crime that they could be doing. And we really need to argue against that. I mean, the only real crime that we know of right now is the police surveillance. So we need our taxpayer money going towards putting those people behind bars and not what a lot of our neighbors and our politicians are constantly telling us are the real criminals, which are just people who are poor, petty criminals. We need, the real crime is the war in Iraq. The real crime is the death penalty, and we need to be fighting that. And I think that's an important argument to make. So I hope we're all demanding for full accountability. I hope we're all testifying at the commission, and I hope we're all out on the streets making the commission know that that we're here and we're angry and we're not going to stop, and that this has to end right now.
Thank you. Okay, Alex, after Alex, we have an open stack. Again, we do encourage all questions, concerns, statements.
Hey, my name's Alex. I've been organizing against the death penalty in Baltimore since 2006, sort of the tail end of when the documents that we have so far end. And I can remember very clearly a lot of the meetings that were discussed and the immaculate and beautiful minutes that the Maryland State Police took for us. But I just want to kind of note that these two issues are part and parcel of the same system, and that we're fighting them together. I don't want there to be kind of a disconnect here, but you know, there's an obvious reason why the Maryland State Police would pick on the death penalty movement. I mean, think about the times in history that these things have been related. The Rosenbergs, right, just had, again, the full documentation of what hasn't happened to the Rosenbergs was denied release, this past week or something. People who ended up getting executed, political dissidents who were spied on, whose lives were ruined, and whose lives were eventually taken away from them brutally and violently by the state. People on death row right now, right? Mumia Abu-Jamal, a former Black Panther, a political activist who has been targeted by the state and now whose life has repeatedly come up and been on death watch over and over again. And you know, things look pretty grim for him right now. But who knows what would have happened, right, if they hadn't been able to get inside of these people's lives, to get inside of our lives, like they're trying to do right now, to try to stifle the kind of dissent and the kind of struggle that we're trying to lead for a more just and more fair world. Would we have so many of these unjust killings? Would we have maybe see some different people up on death row, the people who are really causing the problems in our society, the people who are executing wars, who have killed millions of people overseas that we have no stay in, that we are trying to make our voices heard against those kinds of atrocities? That's what the kind of democracy we really need and that we're fighting for, that I think Terry talked about very well earlier. So I would say right now, anything we can do to build this movement, to fight against the police surveillance, we have them on the defensive. That doesn't happen a lot for us. We need to take full advantage of that. And at the same time, we also have, it came at a wonderful time for us with this state study commission on capital punishment. I think we can use these things together, and I think we can strengthen both sides and bring an end and a fair end to this, to settle this clear injustice that's been happening to us. So I encourage people to also learn more about the commission and stuff. We'll be organizing around that. We're having this meeting on August 2nd. I have flyers at the table in the back. We hope to see everyone there. Spread the word. We'll be trying to particularly plan some kind of public demonstration or action, perhaps a demonstration at the Maryland State Police headquarters or something like that, to voice our complete and utter disgust at what's been going on. So thank you.
Hi, my name's Damian Smith. I'm from D.C. I've been a member of the campaign to end the death penalty for about 10 years, a little over that. It's where my political life really began. And Malcolm X used to like to start meetings by greeting the law enforcement in the room, the overt and the covert law enforcement in the room. And I brought that up not just because I thought it was appropriate, but I thought it was a little more appropriate than that. Political repression and state infiltration of political organizing has been a part of political organizing as long as the political organizing part has been a part of the political organizing. I mean, dating as far back to, General Benedict Arnold, who was, right on up to COINTELPRO. But historically, usually when this type of repression is visited upon radical organizations, it's usually the end of the movement. It's usually enough to bring the movement to an end. That's funny, by the way. That chair right there says reserved for Maryland State Police. That's hilarious. I'm sorry, I just wanted to point that out. But I think we have a unique opportunity to really change the way that these episodes in history are written, because this not have to be the end, but judging from what I see in this room and given the fact that we are privy to things like the Freedom of Information Act because of what happened to the people who came before us, I think we're in a unique position to move forward in a way that'll, instead of this being the end, to me, I think this is only the beginning. Because this only tends to happen when things are actually being effective. When the movement's effective, that's when they're repressive. So I'm actually a bit heartened by the fact that they thought that we were important and frightening enough to send infiltrators. However, while I'm heartened by that fact, because it means we're doing our job, I also believe that what we need to do is maintain our diligence, be as open and as public as we've always been. Don't allow them to frighten us into becoming clandestine organizations who can't operate overtly because of the fear of political repression, because it's going to come if we do our jobs right. But if we do it ultimately, mostly effectively, there's nothing they can do because we'll win.
Excellent. Well said. Actually, do have an open stack. Again, don't be shy. Give it another cue for a second. Oh, would you like to? Okay, sure.
Hi. My name's Dave Schott. I'm a member of the Pledge of Resistance and haven't been that active in the death penalty movement, but I really appreciate what has been said here. I was out in Chicago a couple weeks ago for the National Green Party Convention, and some of you know Maria Alwine and Terry Fitzgerald ran as candidates for the Green Party in, I believe, the last election. And I just wanted to point out that the Green Party is opposed to the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Republicans and Democrats have supported it. Opposed the United States Patriot Act, unlike the other parties. Opposed the invasion of Afghanistan, wants to reduce the military budget, real campaign finance reform. Opposes the death penalty and global corporate power opposed. There are a number of other issues. So, as you may know, Cynthia McKinney, a six-term congresswoman from Georgia, is running as the candidate for president, and Rosa Clemente from the Hip Hop Coalition is running as vice president. Very inspiring speakers. We're hoping that they'll come to Maryland. There are around 60 candidates running in Illinois and across the country. We have one candidate running in the Green Party in Montgomery County. And just pay attention, go to gp.org, check out their site. I think there's something to be said there, and we need to support all kind of movements that are in this corner. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, with that said, I'd like to extend an invitation to join the campaign in the death penalty. If anyone's interested in any more information, it is in the back. We need to really build this thing. Everybody spoke very eloquently. Alrighty, I'd like to turn it. I'd like to turn it back to our speakers to wrap up tonight.
I just want to pitch the meeting once again. Saturday, August 2, 12 noon at the AFSC offices, 4806 York Road. These things don't change on their own. It's a pain in the behind. It's a lot of work, but it's work that has to be done. If you lie down, they'll roll over you and us. With regard to the commission, we have to say in the coalition that we haven't done enough to organize around it, partly because they sprung everything on all of a sudden, and we're going to need help organizing to get information out to people so that they can take part in it, and organizing transportation. This is going to take work. This is going to need participation of others. The Baltimore Coalition Against the Death Penalty can be reached at bcadp@comcast.net. bcadp@comcast.net. Please don't send that out at a whole lot of a bunch of places where the spammers can pick it up, because I've just fled another address which is filled with all kinds of Viagra ads and other trash. But you have to remember, as I'm sure most of you know, this is not something in the past. This getting these documents is not a victory in the past, and we can't leave it to people like the ACLU. It takes work, and it takes coming out, and it takes coming out again and again and again. I mean, that is the lesson that people learn who labor in factories, that it takes discipline. You show up on time, and you keep doing the work, and that's the way we have to approach it, because they are always at work, and they got a hell of a lot more money than we do to fund it.
Dave Zirin sends his apologies. Not only does he have a kid in badly needed braces, but he has another newborn baby that he had to get home and get to bed. So, but he apologized that he had to leave early. And as for me, just to say that it's one thing to have been conducting this surveillance activity, but the context in which it was and think about this, back in 2005, 2006 is when we were conducting a campaign to try to save some people's lives, right? And the lives at stake, people like Stephen Okun, Wesley Baker, and Vernon Evans, right? And the state of Maryland killed Stephen Okun and Wesley Baker. And one of their, their arguments that they tried to convey was is that the public supported it. And all the while, they're basically in the background, basically subverting that very democracy. It's the very basis of that claim, the very legitimacy that they claim to have in order to take a person's life. What's the authority of the state supposed to be based upon? It's just the mandate of the majority of people in Maryland. And if they're even rigging that, then what do they have? They don't even have that authority. And I think that's a troubling issue, that Wesley Baker was strapped to a gurney with the full authority of the state and murdered in the full authority of the state, while that very state was basically running dirty tricks campaigns and undoing the work of activists. And that's dead serious. That turns any thin claim that was justice into even more what it really is, and exposes it for what it is cold-blooded murder. And people should remember that. And I think it's with that notion, that cold-blooded murder that the state has already performed in with Stephen Okun in Wesley Baker, that we have to have open eyes about the commission, right? I'm glad that this commission happens. If the right had and the pro-death penalty crowd had its way, they would never want a commission, because the truth is, the more light that's shed on the issue of the death penalty, the institution of the death penalty, the more it crumbles. The more the truth that comes out, the more it falls apart. I mean, Sister Helen Prejean said, the support for the death penalty is a mile wide, but it's an inch deep, and that inch gets smashed and shattered every time the basic facts about the death penalty come out. But we, as history, as what's in the content of this report show, we can't trust it. What do we have? We have what we've always had, is our numbers. I want to reiterate, we should not learn come out of this meeting with the idea that we can combat this by being suspicious of our fellow activists. Oh, well, he, you know, Terry Fitzgerald, you know, he's got a ponytail. He doesn't fit in. You know, we all have whatever. You know, ear, you know. I mean, it's like no. We have to have our meetings as open and as free as ever. Because the reality is that's what we've always had on our side is numbers. What we've had is democracy. That's what we're doing in practice. That's what we need to continue to do. And you know, and if the cops want to come in and hand out flyers, you know, let them. You know, if they want to carry water for our movements, let them come in and do it. And I don't want to be naive and stupid. You know, if they say stupid things, stupid people should be shown the door. But those kinds of things are obvious. I mean, even in the report, and I remember this at the AFSC hall. We're having a meeting about the death penalty. All of a sudden, somebody pipes up. Has anybody heard about the biotech conference in Fort Detrick? And like, there's silence, and everybody looks. And then goes back. I was like, what? No. And moving on with these, I mean, it's like that kind of thing. Those voices do show up as sore thumbs, but they didn't disrupt our meeting. It didn't disrupt what we wanted to accomplish, and that's what we need to do is continue to build our movements, build openly, not naively, but clear-headedly to press what we need to do, which is to end the death penalty and end the war in Iraq and push forward another vision, a progressive vision here in Maryland.
I'm going to mention the Black Panthers first. Christina Royster Hembley, not with the city paper anymore, but she did two remarkable articles about the Black Panther movement here in Baltimore in 06. And I'll just mention one fascinating thing that came out of this. After a lot of the Panthers were arrested, back in the day, even when I came to Baltimore, if we were arrested, we were taken down by the block there. That was the central district where they would process us. So when these folks were getting out of jail, and some of you may have heard of Larry Gibson, he's a very prominent attorney and also a law professor today. He was acting at that time as their attorney, and he had their jail bags as they were getting out of jail. And what did he find in one of the bags? There was an ID card from the National Security Agency of one of the Panthers. Another reason I'm bringing this up is some of the people in the room know Chet Wickwire. When the Baltimore City Police were going to attack the Black Panther House here in Baltimore, Chet Wickwire and others organized, especially bring Hopkins students down there to surround that house, and it was successful. They did not go in and they did not kill these people because people took out. Unfortunately, our brother Chet, he's the emeritus chaplain at Johns Hopkins right up the road here. Another person in the movement, Lou Curran, just called him recently about the Progressive Action Center, which is going to be sold. And Chet did not know Lou Curran. So I was really sad to hear this, but most of you probably don't even know Chet Wickwire, but this guy is another warrior that we had in this movement for so many years and is getting close to the end of the line. We've got to remember people like that. Most of you in this room are not in any of these documents. That's because you don't come to the meetings. So you start coming to these meetings, you're going to get your names in some of these documents. I can guarantee that. It doesn't matter if you come to the death penalty meeting, we have it at the American Friends Service Committee. You come to the pledge meeting, it's at the American Friends Service Committee. You come to the Hiroshima Nagasaki Commemoration Committee, it's at the American Service Committee. You can get your name in these documents. So later, you're going to have grandchildren, and they're going to ask you, boy, there was this big spying scandal back in the day in Baltimore. Were you involved in that? And you could pull out these documents, Freedom of Information Request, and say, yes, dearie, I was involved. I didn't stay at home. I wasn't going to let this happen. I'm coming out, and I'm going to speak out, and I'm not going to let them do this to me. There's a constitution in this country. There's a Bill of Rights. I don't care what those police people tell me. I'm going to be there. I'm going to do something. So, we've already announced the death penalty meeting. We also have the Pledge of Resistance. That's every Monday at the American Friends Service Committee, 7:30. Come on down. Nice group of people. There's a few jailbirds in the room. Nothing wrong with that. We have people in the Pledge of Resistance have never been arrested. There's lots of support work you can do. There's lots of things you can do. We're just demonstrating outside Dutch Ruppersberger's office yesterday. We're actually in his office first, talking about this spy scandal because Dutch Ruppersberger sits on the House Intelligence Committee. We've met with him a number of times, and he tells us he can't take his cell phones into these meetings. He's got to keep them out, but he can't tell us what happens in these meetings. Well, who knows? Maybe they were discussing about surveillance of peace groups and death penalty opponents and others. We cannot allow this to happen. We have the power. It's up to us if we want to take it. So join us. Be with us. We got to stop talking revolution. We got to be in the streets, and we got to bring on a real nonviolent revolution and change the situation in this country in so many ways. When I talked to the newscaster, she was with us, and she was pointing out, you know, we were meeting with Ben Cardin on the 14th to talk about closing down Guantanamo. That's the day that person hole cover exploded in Baltimore. And what do we find out? That there's like a billion dollars that is needed to fix that infrastructure. And then we've got the water pipes in Baltimore that we need another $1 billion for. Where is this blinkety blank money going? It's going over to Iraq to kill Iraqis, kill US people, kill soldiers from all over the world. We've got to stop this, and we can do it. We just got to come together. Thank you for being here tonight. That's the first step.
Excellent. Well-